Blog Talk Radio.
Now tuned in to OPM Live, where the ordinary is the extraordinary. I am your host, Verna V. Nickelberry, and tonight on the line we have Mr. Robert Slapp, composer, multi-instrumentalist, engineer, and producer, and he also is a native of Detroit, Michigan. And how are you today, sir?
Very good, Verna. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
It is definitely our pleasure. If you don't mind telling our listening audience a little bit about yourself, what you got going on, how did you get started in music, and looking over your bio, you are definitely involved in music, all types of music. Just going to give a little brief right here. His music spans a wide spectrum of styles that include blues, rock, new age, jazz, and film music. So, Mr. Slapp, how did all of that happen? How did it take place?
Well, you know, I grew up in Detroit in the 50s and the 60s, and it was like a wonderful environment to grow up in because there was all kinds of music going on. There was all kinds of things happening. I'm talking about going downtown Detroit still in the days when they still had streetcars. So it was a really booming metropolis in those days, and when the 60s came along, you had Motown, and then Detroit rock and roll burst on the scene in the mid-60s. And I kind of got started, you know, right around the time the Beatles came out, learned to play guitar. I had been playing in the bands and stuff in high school and stuff, but that was just a musical education. But once I started hearing some of that great music, I was kind of, it was like getting bitten by a bug, and I just wanted to get out there and play like everybody else. And it was a great time to be able to be a musician, because in those days, I mean, you just get out there and play, and there's plenty of places to see and people to meet, and it was a wonderful thing. So once I started doing that, it was kind of hard to turn back, and I always loved being on stage. So I thought either I'd be a musician or an actor or something. And those are the two things I kind of focused on in the 60s. Studied acting and played in bands. The funny thing was the first record that I released in the mid-60s with the Detroit group, we had a pretty big hit with it, and kind of was a fluke. But once that happened, I had a pretty good understanding that that's what I wanted to do. So ever since then, I've been going in that direction.
Isn't it amazing when you get that, when that bug bites, and you really didn't know exactly that's what would happen? You just kind of, I don't want to use the word messing around, but you're just kind of playing around with it. But once you get bit by that bug, so to speak, I know the first time I put on a set of headphones, I'm like, wow, I think I want to do this.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I said, I get too excited. I don't need any drugs because I'm on a natural high any time I put on a set of headphones. So I don't need anything else. And I see your first record was called Armored John. And that was the rock group that you were referring to.
Yeah, that was the a Detroit group called the Tidal Waves. And that was our first venture. I mean, we had become a very popular band in Detroit at that time. And, you know, we wanted to put out a record. And in those days, it was totally different than it is now. You actually had to go out, spend the money to record a record, and then get somebody to produce it and promote it and play all over the place for free. And it was the old-style days where, you know, the more you played, the more airplay you get. And so for me, it was like I didn't even know what I was getting into. Truthfully, I was too damn young, man, to know what the hell was going on. And, you know, the record went to number one Detroit in the Flint area. And then nationally it broke the top 100 chart. So we were playing all over. We did, you know, we did a lot of opening acts with national groups. So I got to meet bands like the Dave Clark Five, the Animals, the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, on and on, you know. So it was kind of cool.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine. So by the 60s, you with the is that when you get to Motown by then? What's that like? I mean, this is I'm a little girl by this time. In 1966.
They had a great thing going on in Detroit with Motown at the Fox Theater, which still stands there downtown. A great place, great theater. And they used to have the Motown reviews over there. You could go in there, like, I don't know if they had them on once a month on Thursdays or Tuesdays. I can't exactly remember, but I used to go down there. It cost like $2, $2.50 to go in there. And the Choker Campbell Band would be set up on stage, and they played, they backed up the entire roster of all the Motown acts. So it would always start with something like Martha and Vandellas and then go on and on, Smokey and, you know, the Four Tops, Marvin Gaye, the Supremes, and then they always closed out with Stevie Wonder, who always brought the show down because he's about my age. He was like about 13 or something back then. And, you know, they'd bring this little blind kid out before the band would even play, and he would just sit down and play the keyboards, and he'd play the drums. He'd play all the instruments, and then he'd get up there and pull out the harmonica, and then he'd break in his fingertips, and everybody went crazy. So, I mean, that's
Wow. Some really good stuff.
That's some really good stuff to grow up to, I tell you.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm a visual person, so as you're speaking, I'm visualizing all of this wonderful music you had a chance to be around. I'm just so thankful that you're on our show to get to share all of this with us because, you know, we don't it's a little different nowadays, the music scene is, but to be a part of Motown and all the wonderful music that was before, that's a blessing. And to be
Motown left Detroit in, 1972, and it kind of coincided with me moving out to L.A. So I kind of, you know, once I decided, like you say, after a while, the only thing I could think about was either playing music or doing something creative, and you really don't have a choice. You know, some people, you know, can pick and choose what they want to do, and I was kind of like, this is all I ever really wanted to do was to just follow this path and see where it led me. You know, it was kind of a exploration, but then, you know, like you say, I was really excited about it. So that's kind of how I ended up in Los Angeles, then kind of following where the music scene was going, because Motown moved out there in 72, and then a lot of Detroit people that I had worked with over the years also moved out there in 72. And what people don't realize is that there were a lot of Detroit people out in L.A. all during the 70s and the 80s that, you know, that was just the scene then. So it was really good, not only moving out to a new city like that and being out in California, but having a lot of your friends and people you work with out there at the same time was a great place too.
I can only imagine. Now you went from, and also I see that you studied jazz and propagation and theory. Now how do you go from the Motown scene to, you know, to get into the jazz? How do you transition that?
Well,
or does it all work together?
Well, you know, the thing is with me is, like, you know, I was classically trained in music, reading and writing music, so I've always been good at, when I hear a melody in my head that's really good, I can sit down and block it out on a piece of paper so I don't forget it by the time I get home, you know. That's been my MO for years. I always carried a pad of sheet music in the passenger seat of my cars because, especially living out in L.A. or I live near Chicago now, you spend a lot of time on the road with nothing to do, and, you know, you get that idea and you just jot it down, and then, you know, at least you're not wasting time while you're sitting there in traffic.
Yeah, Wow. That's amazing. And yeah, so but, now it's open.
Yeah, going back to the music thing, though, I always kept, you know, I have this desire to learn things and always to keep changing and not be stuck in one particular group or type of music or whatever, because there's so much out there that, I mean, you know, it's just like you can't cover it all in one lifetime. And I've always pursued studies in jazz and theory besides the rock thing, and then incorporating that into writing music, because the more you study, the more you hear other kinds of music, and it gives you ideas of, you know, to go beyond the 12 tones that we generally have to work with. And then I studied UCLA in the film school there, and that totally opened me up to a whole nother approach of music, you know, from the dramatic aspect. So, you know, as you learn things, you know, you apply them to what you like to do, and you know how it is with an artist. I mean, you know, you gotta go with the flow. A lot of my great teachers from UCLA, film scores and really great people, composers, always told me, you know, things go in a cycle. You know, it's like you're not going to be at the top of the heap all the time, but, you know, sometimes you'll be at the top and then sometimes you'll be at the bottom, but you got to look at it from a long-term perspective as this is your life, this is your career, you know, do what you got to do and, you know, the chips will fall where they will, you know.
You've had an awesome career. I mean, I'm still thinking about you being a part of Motown and all those great musicians back then that, you know, we see them as grown-ups now. And that had to be one of the best times for you, I can imagine. But
well,
then we go to the – go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm cool.
I was looking at you also create music for healing therapy. That's
oh, yeah.
Another shift.
Well, this was when I was out in the 80s, out in L.A. was a great time for what people have called New Age music. I don't know where they came up with that, but the idea being that I always called it inner harmony or music for relaxation or music for massage, music for creative visualization, whatever. But an alternative music genre that would give people some time to reflect, you know, on their inner self, music that got you in touch, you know, with your inner being, that kind of thing. You can call it spiritual. You can call it what you want. It wasn't something that, you know, you just – sign up for to do. You know, I had moved out there, and I was L.A. happened to be a great place in the 80s. Shirley MacLaine had a book out then. I don't know if you remember that, but that was like the book that kind of kicked off the whole New Age movement about her experiences with past lives and creative visualizations and all this other stuff. So there was a whole lot of interest in the 80s for that kind of pursuit of spirituality, you know, and along with it, there was a lot of great music, and I picked up an album by Charles Lloyd in the late 70s, and him and I are friends on Facebook, and I told him, you know, that album you did in 1978, I think it was, Pathless Path, it's not available, I don't even think, anymore. I still have it here on cassette. But I said, that was such a cool album. It really changed the way I thought about music because it approached it from a non-musical point of view into a strictly emotional point of view, or what soul music actually is, you know, the Motown thing, because that's kind of how I've always been. I always play from my heart, not from my head. You know, it's not like I can sit down and say, I'm going to create this kind of music today. I can only create music when it comes to me. You know, it's like a... it's an organic thing.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what New Age music to me is like. You know, you create music that allows people to relax from the, you know, craziness of the day-to-day commercial world and get into a more spiritual place in their mind. And, you know, I did a few albums, And I didn't realize that, you know, people really, really use this stuff for healing purposes and all kinds of things that I never really thought about. And then over the years, you know, I had been contacted by doctors and therapists and all other people, you know, to create some music for them for their particular need. And that was a, you know, that was something that I've been kind of working on and off my entire life. So that's a really good thing for me, because that is not, it doesn't have anything to do with the music business. It has more about helping people help themselves, and you know, if I can help somebody, you know, heal themselves or feel good by listening to music and getting a massage or just sitting there praying or meditating or whatever, what it is people do, then that I get a lot of satisfaction over that more than anything, because, I mean, weren't we put here on the world to help other people? I mean, it's not about us. It's about everybody, you know?
Absolutely. And as you were speaking, how do you, because I love that music, you go to a spa, it just seems like the best music to listen. You find yourself drifting off to such a peaceful sleep. And I often wonder, how do they come up with that? How do they know how to put the different sounds together? And so I'm asking, how do you draw? What inspires you? How do you get there to create this awesome music?
Well, here's the thing. You know, there's a lot of ancient scales and ancient techniques that have been around for years, because music is older than, think about it, music is really the first form of communication we had. I mean, we were probably beating on drums and making sounds and other things long before we had any way to speak to each other verbally. So it's the same thing is with music, is that, you know, it's a primal instinct thing. And so there's these ancient pentatonic scales that, you know, a lot of us are aware of that generate that kind of feeling of ease, and it's just a natural thing, like the flow of water. There are certain scales and techniques that you can use in the musical genre to create that flowing effect. And then you combine that with, you know, you explore. I mean, you have to do a lot. I mean, believe me, to do one album takes a long time, maybe a year or two at least for me, to do a complete album, because I have to search for sounds, and then I have to think about a concept. Where am I trying to go with this? Because it's a visual thing for me. So you search for sounds and textures. And then, you know, I used to do a lot of field recording. I'd go out there in the field in the middle of the desert somewhere and record 24 hours of by the riverbank, or I'd go out to the ocean. So you accumulate all this stuff, and then you get a feeling of how can I put this together in a program, sort of, you know. And it just kind of comes to you. It's just that you pick out one kind of an idea that you want to follow, whatever your theme is. For instance, this latest release I have that's New Age, it's called Atlantis Trilogy. It's really three different albums. It's a complete story of the Atlantis theory and you know, the whole story that, you know, that I've kind of been thinking about for a long time, and I kind of put it to music. And what I did with this latest release is that I wrote a new album, the third part of it. But since I haven't released, the first albums came out in the 1980s and 1990s, what I did is I pulled a few tracks from those albums and remixed them and added them with the new music and brought out this new album that has all three, that has the whole story. And, you know, it works together so well that it's a whole new album and a way to listen to it. It'll take you into another place. I've been getting some good reviews from friends of mine that I've sent out some new copies to, and, you know, they're getting into it. And that's just the Atlantis album, because I have the jazz album, too, that, because, you know, I do everything, so I'm not bored around here.
We'll have to get some of that music to play it on our show. But I was, because I had the music that first come on is music that was created for me, and I was trying to tell the person who created it. He's like, what do you want? I'm like, I told him, I said, I want I could see the colors bursting. I said, you know, like a burst. He's like, that's not a sound. I'm like, but you know, you can, you don't see it, but it's like if you, you feel it, it's like you can hear it when you like hear, when you see like firecrackers and you add that sound to music and you add water to music and you add the sound of a horse galloping. You take all of that and create music to it. But it was so hard to describe to him what I wanted. I think he got it just a little bit right because it was, I said, I needed sunshine and bursts. He was like, I don't have a clue as to what you're talking about. But
yeah,
as I'm reading your, that's what I meant. That kind of, that would be so uniquely to me. And he got it a little bit right. He got it a little bit right. So the music that first come on was uniquely to me. And for his colors and sounds and everything goes, it's amazing. Listen to you, everything that you've done in your lifespan. It's just, it's so phenomenal and an awesome pleasure to meet you and to talk with you about these different things. I commend you on everything that you've done. Thank you so very much for it. And sharing yourself with the world and all your learned knowledge about music and putting different music together, I appreciate you for that. Thank you so very much.
Well, that's great because you know, it's hard to get the word out sometimes. I mean, you hear the music, but you know, there's a whole lot more behind it than people realize. You know, there's always the story is always probably just as interesting as the music.
Mr. Snap, our time is far spent, but if you can tell our listening audience how they can connect with you and how they may be able to contact you and if you are even available for booking or any type of situation for that sport, if you could just tell our listening audience how they can do those things.
Oh, sure, great. Yeah, I have a website now, and it's my full name, Robert Slap, like S-L-A-P, slap in the face, .com, and everything that I'll be doing is on there right now. I have two new albums out available, and I also am on Facebook. So if you get to my website, you can get to the Facebook from there. I also have a YouTube site. And if you go to YouTube, you can just type my name in there, and I have all kinds of stuff out there, 20, 30 titles on YouTube right now that are pretty interesting if you want to listen. But give it a listen, and, you know, like I say, robertslap.com is where you can start. Thank you very much.
Oh, is your music sold anywhere else?
Well, it's going to go – it's right now it's available at my website on CD, but it's all available for download at all the other outlets, iTunes, Amazon, MP3, Google Plus, and through the streaming networks also.
Okay. So we thank you so much, Mr. Slap, for being on OPM Live Block Talk Radio and sharing with us on today.
Thank you, and this was great. I really appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We would like to thank all of our sponsors, Vimashi Enterprise, TND Next Dimension and Marketing, Southern Eagle Music Group, and Crevolution Arts. And leaving you with this coming from Psalms 1, King James Version of the Bible, verses 1 through 2. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the land, and in his law doeth he meditate day and night. This has been OPM Live Blog Talk Radio, where the ordinary is the extraordinary. I am your host, Verna V. Nickelberry, and leaving you with this, Release the Sound by Mr. John Murray.
We sanctify. Praise it.